Good morning. Hopefully you didn't have too much fun last night, or if you did, even better. Today I'm joined with Sriram Natarajan, Anjay Joda, and myself, Matt McGlynn. We are all program managers on the Azure Stack team. Awesome. So we're going to talk today a little bit about DevOps and kind of how DevOps relates to Azure Stack. But before we jump into this, just to get a kind of feel for where you guys are at, out of curiosity, how many of you guys use PowerShell, you'd say, on a regular basis? A good majority of you. Awesome. How about ARM templates or even Azure in general? Looks like a little bit of a smaller portion, but still a good amount of you, which is great. And then how many of you would you say have some kind of internal initiative towards operating in kind of like a DevOps fashion? A lot of you. Awesome. How many would you say have like been successful with that movement? So, okay. Cool. Awesome. I'm not going to try to spend a ton of time giving you a two-sentence definition of DevOps. I mean, DevOps really embraces a wide range of people, processes, and tools. It's really about collaboration, moving quickly, delivering value to your customers, and aligning IT with the business. So we'll kind of go into some of the elements there throughout the presentation, and I'll try to make it as concrete for you guys as possible. I mean, a lot of this high-level stuff might be interesting to you, but I think you want to see some real examples and some real practice of it with Azure Stack. So one of the central themes I kind of want to convey throughout this presentation is that in our world, cloud is not really a location to us. It's more of a model for application development and for organizational processes. So we really believe that cloud will ease the adoption of DevOps practices. It's not going to give you a full DevOps setup, but it will at least make it easier for organization to adopt DevOps. And there's a few quick reasons why we believe that, and that's self-service. I think cloud fundamentally is a self-service model, and that enables you to have much faster deployment times. It's easy to delete, recreate, and keep moving quickly in a self-service world. It's much easier with cloud to define your infrastructure as code. If you've used ARM templates, you're already kind of familiar with how Azure defines infrastructure as code, and obviously how Azure Stack will define infrastructure as code. So these are all core DevOps concepts, and it's part of the overall cloud vision to kind of bring those constructs into a really attainable manner for your organization. So we just want to make it as easy as possible for you to adopt DevOps. And there's more to it than just having a cloud and it's not over. There's still going to be process changes and culture changes that the organization will work through. But hopefully bringing a cloud will really help that. And there's an ecosystem of tooling that clouds provide. It's very easy to get the DevOps tools that you're looking for. So if you kind of think about this in the context of Azure Stack and Azure, I'm actually not partial, even though I am on the Azure Stack team, between which cloud you use. I mean, it could be your cloud. If it's Azure Stack, great, awesome. But it's also Azure. I mean, Azure is a great place if you have applications that can run in the public cloud to move into this DevOps mindset as well. Again, we're just trying to offer you a choice of location for your cloud, and if you have constraints in your private environment, Azure Stack is a great alternative. But it really brings you that kind of cloud service delivery model to your organization. Oh, sorry. So kind of a forward-looking construct here is let's kind of step back and think of IT as driving the profit of the business, rather than kind of maintaining and being kind of a cost center. Let's think of it as driving the business forward, so introducing new lines of business and finding new products. And so in a world like that, there's a lot of room for IT to kind of grow in terms of understanding applications a little deeper. So normally, IT has not been as focused on the application side. They've been more focused on the infrastructure side. But I think there's going to be a closer union of those two, where we really start being more focused about making sure that the application is in a great state and has what it needs to run. And so it may not be about standing up the latest hardware, just to have the latest hardware. It may be more about looking at an application, looking at the business value that application provides, and then standing up the infrastructure appropriately. And this is where a lot of tools and processes can kind of help you. And then there's also an experimentation. So IT may be kind of going outside the traditional mold and trying new things quickly and learning from those, whether they are successful or not. You're going to probably have some of both. But it's kind of a newer world where IT is really driving things forward. So kind of a cool vision. So there's three personas that really participate in a DevOps process or culture, really. So you have the developers, you have these IT ops folks, and you have the business. Today, these are quite separate roles, and it has led to quite a bit of inefficiency. Failing in software development is not cheap. If your application does not work and goes down for even an hour, it can be hundreds of thousands of dollars. So it's really important to get this right. Even from the beginning, I mean, there's a lot of times that we have 40% here. 40% of the time, you may not even have the right software product. So you spend all this time implementing it, and you get it to market, and all of a sudden, it just does not end up well. And that's a lot of money that is sunk into that. And a lot of dev teams have started adopting agile processes. Like something like 3/4 of dev teams have started going into an agile methodology. And there's kind of a supposition from them that their IT ops teams are not quite in as agile of a methodology yet. And so their IT ops teams are kind of dragging them down. Whether it's true or not is different for every organization, but dev teams are moving faster and faster, and they expect their IT ops teams to kind of keep up. You're in a situation here where it's critical to have collaboration. If developers and IT ops are not aligned with the business, you have inefficiencies, and inefficiencies are extremely expensive. So moving forward, I think as a union of roles, this will become increasingly important. So just in general, software delivery challenges, I mean, it's tough to deliver the right product, right? But we still see companies like Netflix and Amazon and others that do it every day, right? They seem to be able, despite all the frustrations that we know with software, to deliver the right product really quickly. And that's awesome. And looking into their processes, there's some things that we can kind of glean from, and we'll go through that in this presentation. Maybe not specifically those examples, but more general ideas that we can glean from them. But we want to avoid the frustration, delays, and lack of insights that you traditionally have with applications. So we don't want, for instance, the deployment of an application to be this frustrating nightmare. It should be very, very easy. It should be repeatable. It should not be something where you have last-minute problems. And that should hopefully start help reducing delays where you have the application ready to go. It should be pretty quick to deploy it and get it running in the environment. And then just deploying an application isn't really enough. To really bring it home, you have to make sure that the application is actually addressing the customer demand. And so part of that is making sure that you have appropriate insights into the application. And we'll talk about some tools that allow you to do that. So if we kind of think about the traditional model, you have dev kind of tossing the completed product over the wall of confusion into the operations side. And there's not much discussion beforehand. And so when IT ops folks get it, they sometimes will maybe redo the deployment scripts, take a look at what the devs did, and say, oh, wait, that doesn't really match the environment that we're deploying to. So they kind of go ahead and edit it and rebuild it in a slightly different way. And then all of a sudden, you're going through a whole new code path that the devs have never actually tested in their dev environment. So you have something that is always kind of a recipe for potential disaster. So we kind of want to move away from that model, obviously. So that's what we'll kind of focus on today. To kind of hone this to Azure Stack, I'm obviously from the Azure Stack team, let's take a look at some traditional processes for on-prem. Really, you have the business that has been really driving turbulence and innovation, so really trying to move quickly. And historically, especially on-prem, IT has been trying to keep up. But at the same time, they have the responsibility, and it's a really tough one, of making sure that things run stable and predictably. Having an IT outage is not acceptable, but at the same time, the business is demanding more and more. So we have to think about ways in which we can keep up. If you look at so cloud transformation is one element of that, right? So bringing a cloud to the organization is a way to kind of allow IT to keep up with the business needs better. But if you look at like a traditional on-premises workflow, there's quite a bit of handoff. So we'll start this with, you've got some developers. They go ahead, they write their application, and they need to go ahead and get some infra requirements stood up. They need to start testing and maybe getting a staging environment ready to go. So they hand off the requirements for the infrastructure and they say, hey, I think we're gonna need this and this. Meanwhile, they're still checking in code and committing it to their repository over and over again, but the requirements are kind of more of a one-off thing. They said, oh, hey, this is probably what we'll need. But the application continues to change. So there already you see a handoff, which could lead to errors. It can lead to frustration between both ends, where IT feels like the devs don't know what they're asking for. They keep asking for the wrong thing, and vice versa. The devs are like, I just need the infrastructure to kind of change with my application. So in this model already, you see that the code has already kind of separated from the infrastructure underneath. And that separation is just leads to all kinds of potential errors and potential problems down the line. And you maybe go ahead and deploy to your first platform, which is your staging platform, let's say. And only after you've done that kind of end-to-end process where the IT folks have come up with the infrastructure in this new environment and the developers have finally cut off something that's kind of close to what they think their application will be, do you have this full integration taking place. And that integration is pretty late on in the cycle, and it's very likely that in that process you might have already introduced some errors. So really, there's a lot of handoffs in this traditional workflow. Another problem is you have to kind of do the same thing again when you get to another stage. So you have your production platform, which actually may be an entirely different platform. It may be different hardware, a different hypervisor platform, or whatever it may be. And that may actually affect how the application runs. And so you then have a second stage of this where developers kind of head back, make some new requirements, make sure that they've got something ready for production. And there's yet another handoff with IT to kind of build those. So really, this model is it's error-prone because there's just so many handoffs. It can work. I mean, it can be quick, but it's still something that is probably not ideal. And then at the end of it, you have an application which is deployed kind of specifically to a platform. It's kind of tied to that platform. That's not something that is really good for maybe having mobility to the cloud later on. So if you kind of take a look at what Azure and Azure Stack could provide in kind of a DevOps model with self-service and having infrastructure as code, all of a sudden you start combining the software code and the infrastructure code into one repository. So instead of kind of writing out the infrastructure requirements separately from the software requirements, they're done together, and they're done at a faster cadence. So you can imagine checking in quickly and making sure that integrations happen instantly. So you have some kind of build process that will spin up everything and make sure that you've already integrated successfully and you're ready to deploy to all these environments. And then the beauty is that you may have real requirements that say, hey, this application can only run in a private cloud. That is something very legitimate. And if that's the case, I mean, it's here in this model, it's simply a deployment bit swap, right? Like you're saying, okay, I'm going to go ahead and go to Azure Stack instead of Azure. That's all you're changing. And it is really, really easy. And so that kind of flexibility to go between the two, I mean, it's very possible that you want to do dev tests in Azure still. And then once your application's in production, it's probably very important to keep it locally. So just being able to switch between the two is something that will allow that infrastructure code and that software code to get quite a bit of mileage, right? So now all of a sudden you don't have a separate workflow for on-prem and a separate workflow for when you do cloud deployment. cloud development. Deployment time is quick, right? Like all of a sudden you're making changes and it just automatically kicks off a build process, and all of a sudden you deploy, and it's just, it's a very, very easy process. Infrastructure can be created and deleted. And it's important to think about the skill sets that you've developed over your careers and how they can kind of apply to this model with DevOps. I mean, there's a lot that you've learned that's extremely applicable to this model, whether it be on the consumption side, so really focusing on the application. Then there's still a lot of, well, there's an Azure stack, right? Someone's still got to kind of maintain that and stand that up. So there's a lot of opportunities for folks in IT to kind of put themselves into the DevOps pipeline, whether it be on either side, being more application-centric or making sure that the platform is ready for the application.
All right. Thanks, Matt. So let's kind of take a pause here for a little bit and recap what's been happening. All right. So DevOps is a culmination of people, processes, and tools, right, all coming together for a common goal, which is delivering a high-quality product or delivering a value to the hands of a customer as fast as you can, with as much quality as there possibly can be, right? When in the beginning of the session, when Matt asked a question, say, okay, how many of you are doing DevOps today, right? A lot of you put your hands up, that you're starting the DevOps processes in your enterprises. The next question was, how many of you think you've successfully completed your DevOps practices? How many of you think you have successfully implemented DevOps? And a significantly less number of hands went up. And I'm sure if I were to come and talk to each of you individually, you would have some kind of idea as to why your DevOps practices failed, and you can categorize them into one of these three categories. It's either the people, the mentality, the willingness to actually change that model into a more agile format, the processes, the tools, the development methodologies, the release methodologies, the building methodologies that you're actually using to build your products, or tools. The kind of tools that you're using may not necessarily support DevOps. Even if one of these three things fail, doing DevOps is going to be, I wouldn't say a nightmare, it's going to be really hard. So Matt basically came in and he talked about the people involved and the processes that we're trying to enable in DevOps with Azure and with Azure Stack. I will take that forward and talk about tools. So, in this slide here, when we say DevOps and tools involved in DevOps, you have a ton of tools available out there. Like, not even funny, there's so many tools out there to do so many things, so many parts of a DevOps process, that you're going to be like, hey, what should I be using, right, for my DevOps process? What are they for? What should I be using for what processes? I'm going to animate out here a little bit and say, OK, just a quick show of hands. In this particular set of DevOps tools that we have, how many of you are using under 5 tools? Under 5? Under 5? OK. How many of you are using 5 or more? More than 10? Because if you have, I want to come talk to you. So really, what should I be using and for what purpose, right? So the way we've kind of put this together is we need to be able to classify these tools into appropriate buckets, into appropriate processes in the DevOps process, and categorize the tools in each of those buckets. And then you will have a clear understanding of what tools do I use, when do I use them, how will they help me get from point A to point B, right? This is a fairly good model that we've seen work. And once you see this in a slide, it's actually pretty obvious. Like, these are the things that you have to do to get a product to a customer. You build, you develop, you build and test, then you deploy, then you quality assess, then you keep doing that, and then you put it into environments, which could be your pre-prod environment, which could be your user testing environment, acceptance testing environments, or in the end, your production environments, or shipping it to your customer. Once you're done with that, you're not done. Then you have to monitor. You have to keep monitoring it, and you have to keep learning from that so that you can start improving your dev operational process. So this cycle will help you keep doing better DevOps, and it gets better with experience, right? So let's take a look at what a Microsoft pipeline would look like in this, right? Microsoft has built an enormous array of tools that will help you do DevOps. If I were to categorize each of the Microsoft products that we have into these buckets, this is what it's going to look like. I have my developers building on a Windows ecosystem, right? I can use Visual Studio Team Services or VSO online, or I have my own Team Foundation server on premises that I can use for source control. Then I build. I can build using Visual Studio Online or the Team Foundation server or the Release Manager for Visual Studio, and I can test with the Microsoft Test Manager or the Team Foundation server or VS. So you get a fair idea of those things. Then I can deploy. When I deploy, I can actually use automation. I can use PowerShell. I can use Azure, Xplat CLI, PowerShell, all the SDKs that we have for Azure and for Azure Stack, Azure Resource Manager, which is a deployment tool. Environments can be Azure or Azure Stack or any other, you know, local environments that you may have that you're deployed. So we're talking about cloud. That's why we have Azure and Azure Stack or third-party or service provider cloud on the top, because this is a cloud-based DevOps model. And then you monitor and learn. Microsoft has a ton of tools that will let you look at what you've deployed, learn from it, get as much insights as you possibly can from it, and feed it back to your development process, see what you can do to better optimize that process, including App Insights for your applications or OMS, right? Now, what does this look like on a heterogeneous ecosystem? This is all the open source tools. This is a slide that we built specifically with open source tools for the most part. This is a good set, but this is not a complete set. This is just some things that we've worked with, we've tried working with, and successfully done, right? So, you know, developer workstation, same thing. Like, you have a Visual Studio, or you have a Mac, or you can use Eclipse. Source control is going to be GitHub, CodePlex, Vagrant, Docker. Test can be Jenkins. Building can be Grunt or Gradle. Deploy using Chef or Puppet Labs or Hudson or SalStack. Environments can be Azure, Azure Stack, and a variety of platforms out there, including containers like Docker or a Linux environment or a Java-based environment. And then you can monitor using open source tools like Nagios and Zabbix. Today, we're going to show you two, which we think, very cool demos. One is, I'm going to show you what a typical DevOps pipeline looks like with Microsoft tools. So Visual Studio, TFS, TFS release management, and what it looks like to deploying it on Azure and Azure Stack. Anjay is going to come up next, and Anjay is going to be doing this exact same set of things using the open source pipeline. So we want you to kind of get a flavor of both and see how things are happening on both ecosystems. Again, this is not a complete set, or we're not prescribing that this is the way to do DevOps. We're showing you one of the ways that you can do this. And if you know what the pipeline is, what the model is, I'm sure you guys are all smarter than us, and you can figure out what exactly will work for your organization, right? So have that in mind when you're actually looking at the demos. So we talked about people, processes, and tools. Now let's talk about practices. DevOps practices can help bridge the gap between the high-level DevOps conversation between, you know, oh, your people need to have the mindset, or you need to put appropriate processes in place to support DevOps, to a lower-level conversation that says, hey, you need to have the exact set of tools to be able to facilitate it. Practices will effectively blend those conversations. So when you talk about any one particular practice, you're talking about all three of those core components in some way or the other. And that helps you have a more meaningful conversation inside your organization, right? You can pick any one or more of these things in this list, and you can say, okay, we want to get better at this point in time, and subsequently work your way down the list. And this is no particular order, right? Depending on what your product is, depending on what you're building, you can take this in any particular order, right? First one is like infrastructure as a code. Anjay is going to be talking about it in detail a little later on. But infrastructure as a code in one line is effectively using your development tools, the ones that you're actually using today to build your products, to also deploying the infrastructure needed for that application to run. So use development tools to actually do everything starting from infrastructure, middleware, up to application deployment. That is the practice, infrastructure as a code. Continuous integration. So traditionally, devs check in code. We take it, we pull it, we build it, and then we figure out what broke, and then we test it. Send all the bugs back, they do that exact same process again. But continuous integration is effectively as and when a developer checks in code into a repository, the system will integrate that code, possibly spin up a build, and if you go a little bit further and you're mature enough, have automated tests that will tell you whether your commit broke the build or not. And then the developer effectively gets a warning that says, hey, you broke the build, go fix it. We have a wall of shame at Microsoft in each of our offices where when a dev breaks a build, we have a Jenkins implemented. It shows red, and the culprit, it literally says culprit, and then the person's name effectively on it. So that dev has to get on it, fix the build. Continuous integration. Automated testing leads into it. So when you do continuous integration, you want to have automatic testing, right? You can either do them as unit tests that actually run when a dev checks in code, or build verification tests, or you can actually have tests that run when a product is actually deployed into a staging environment, which will be the same effect. But the point is, this is kept running. This happens every time code is checked in. So you have that continuous feedback cycle. Continuous deployment. Again, you'll see that these things actually lead into each other. When you have a CI, when you have automated testing, and everything is good, you want to have continuous deployment. You want to actually be able to deploy that good build into a pre-prod environment or a user testing environment. Or further on, release it into your production environment, which is release management. And depending on what your product is, and depending on the maturity of your testing, you may or may not want to automate these things, right? If you have a sophisticated level of testing that you're thinking that, okay, my product can, the test, I have so much confidence on my test cases and my test framework that if it passes my test framework, it can be qualified to throw it into production, you can automate the entire flow, right? So release management is another process. App performance and monitoring. You can use tools like App Insights, which will let you gain insights into the performance of certain apps. You can perform stuff like availability monitoring. You can perform stuff like, oh, my memory is running out, or this application is not being sufficiently load balanced, so I need to scale my application out. So app performance monitoring. On a higher scale, you can actually push that even further and kind of start doing, as I said, the availability monitoring as well as the app itself being conscious enough for the fact that, oh, I'm being overloaded, I probably need to be scaled out, or giving you that feedback. Configuration management. Configuration, how many of you have the problem of configuration drift in your enterprises? Like when you have a production environment, okay, I see a good amount of people there. So configuration drift is a major problem. When you actually have an application and you keep checking in code, something must change, something changed, and you need to have the ability to understand what changed, or you need to have the ability, in other words, to be able to deterministically say what the configuration of each of your environments is. So that's another practice. These are what we call, you know, core practices, core standard practices that everybody will do. More advanced set, these are not standard, but a more advanced set is effectively availability monitoring, as I said, load testing and auto scale, they keep flowing in. Feature flags, where you're effectively saying, hey, I'm going to hide my features behind a certain feature flag, and I'm going to face the release of that feature. So what that is like, this is something that we do in Azure, and this is something that I've seen Azure do really well. When they build a new feature, the Azure portal team, if they're listening to this, they're the most agile team that I've ever seen, I've ever worked with at this point. They keep checking in code every day, every 2 days. And when there is a feature that's completed, they don't push it out all at once. They test it behind the feature flag. So only specific subscriptions will get access to that feature. And once they get enough telemetry and enough data that that feature is going to work, they start more broader rollouts. Sometimes they even test it in one particular region. I want to have a selective rollout to a particular region to get the amount of data I want. And once I'm happy with the feature's functionality and its performance, I'm going to send it out to everybody, right? So feature flags. Automated environment provisioning and deprovisioning, which is basically your dev and test environments. Every time you want to do continuous deployment, you may want to spin up a new environment just to get the feel of what it looks like when that is done. Automated recovery, roll back and roll forward. Roll back is effectively when you update it, something fails. So you roll back to the last known good state. Roll forward is even more advanced. You find something wrong, you have an automated way for that to be fixed, the patch to be tested, applied, and rolled on. And then hypothesis-driven development. Testing in prod, just like I said, fault injection, purposely bringing down the application to see what fails, user monitoring, usage monitoring, and user telemetry, right? Now, I think I've spoken enough at this point. I'm going to hand it off to Matt for a really quick demo on infrastructure as a code. Want to take it off, Matt?
Cool. You guys see all that? All right. Cool. So something that comes up a bit is the interplay between DSC, so desired state configuration, if you guys are familiar with that tool, and then ARM. What these tools really are geared to at is kind of declarative for your infrastructure, declaring what your infrastructure should look like. I just kind of want to show you how a little bit of an interplay between the two. ARM is used for declaring kind of the main infrastructure components, so like VMs, virtual networks. If you see in this template here, we've got a VM, a virtual network, a storage account. Let's see if I can zoom in here 1 second. And then you also have like a public IP and a VNet. So there's a lot of different like aspects to a template that can be configured, and that's really the infrastructure piece of it. But then if you look at DSC, DSC's purpose is more towards the configuration in guest. So when we talk about once you have a VM, what does that VM's internal state look like? There's other ways to accomplish this other than DSC, but DSC is one where you can make sure that it's declarative. So in this case, this template right here that we're kind of visualizing is actually a template that deploys a VM with a DSC extension, and it pushes a configuration to that VM to make it an IIS server. So just a simple web server, and this will kind of serve as the infrastructure that Sri uses in his pipeline. But the key here is that you can apply this template over and over again, and it is completely adimpotent. It'll both make sure that the configuration is an IIS server for sure, and it also makes sure that the VM was created with the correct NIC and the right VNet, and it'll do that. And it'll just diff any changes between the two. So instead of having a model where, for instance, we inject a script in there, we don't have to do the idempotency ourselves. DSC will do the idempotency, and all we need to do is tell it where we want this VM to go. And in the case of this application, we want this VM to become a web server. So if we'll look for a quick couple seconds here at the DSC configuration. So if you can see this all right. 1 second. There we go. We're just trying to make sure that the IIS Windows feature is present, as well as ASP.NET 4.5 and the console. So it's quite simple, that's the configuration that we're going to push that VM. So that's in the payload of the template. So in the template, if we just look at one section down here at the bottom, you'll notice that we are specifying the DSC extension. So we're saying, okay, after you've gone ahead and deployed that template, load up this DSC extension. It actually points to a configuration in a GitHub that is this configuration that I just showed a second ago, and then it'll pull it into the guest, into the in-guest, so the VM itself, and customize it. So the end result of this, just on an Azure Stack environment, I can pull it up real quick, is that if you look at it, we have our DSC IIS VM1. It's in our Azure Stack environment. It's running. And we provisioned that DSC extension. It's pulled down the configuration from our GitHub file, which told it, hey, you should probably become an IIS server now. And if we look at it, just the finished product real quick, you see that the IIS role is indeed enabled. So this is just kind of a basic demo, but it just highlights the idempotency interplay between ARM and DSC. We just want to make sure that when we deploy things over and over again, it's idempotent. It's not trying to do the same thing again and get like a different result. It's trying to get towards the declarative state that we've set out. And I think that's all for me.
Yep, perfect. Thanks, Matt. So what you saw there was infrastructure as a code, and you've probably been hearing about this all week. Like, you probably had a lot of sessions that told you, what are ARM templates, what is Azure Resource Manager, why it helps you in your development process, right? ARM templates, Azure or Azure Stack deployment through ARM, calls into a DSC configuration, and you get a configured VM. This is defining infrastructure through an ARM template. This is code. Now, so let's talk about the other processes, continuous integration. So you effectively have development, you have a version control, you have built-in unit testing, acceptance testings, you know, which can be automated or, you know, user acceptance testing, and you finally have release. These are the different stages. These are some of the different stages that you can put your application through. Developer effectively checks in code, goes into the version control system, and the version control system effectively will trigger a build. You can have continuous integration set up in your version control system that triggers a build, and there may or may not be a problem. Sometimes there is a problem. So the feedback is given back to the developer and said, hey, you broke the build, go fix it, right? And they do that. They fix it, they do it into the version control, which spins up another build, and they fixed it this time. This keeps happening all the time. This keeps happening until you get to a state where you're saying, okay, this feature is complete, and I can actually go push it to the next level. So let me show you, and I'm gonna keep swapping back and forth between my demo and my slide to kind of explain to you what the process really is, right? So I'm gonna swap to my demo environment right now. So I went ahead and I deployed a TFS server in my on-premises, and I put Visual Studio in there. I have an application that I'm developing, and I'm using agile development methodologies on this one. This is actually a board that says these are the list of things that Sriram as a developer has to do, right? Now I think, okay, there is a typo on the home page and Microsoft is spelled incorrectly. This is a bug, right? So I, as a developer, I'm gonna go in and I'm gonna be like, oh, hey, yeah, so Microsoft is spelled wrong. And I'm gonna fix it and I'm gonna save it. This is not a development demo. I'm just showing you what your developers will do with what you're enabling, right? And then I need to check in my change into my version control. I'm saying, fixed spelling. And then I can say, hey, this is work item number 7. So I'm going to enter the work item number 7. It effectively is going to look in and say, okay, this is my TFS system. It's actually adding work item number 7. Right? And then I'm going to commit and I'm going to push. Right? Before I commit and push, I want to show you something. So I actually said I have a TFS server set up, which is this interface. TFS has an awesome web interface which will let you manage your build and release configurations. So when a developer actually checks in code into the TFS version control, you can have build actions that tells TFS what to do with that check-in effectively, right? So when I actually go into one of the configurations that I have, I'm calling it CI builds very innovatively. Let's see, CI builds. Pardon the environment, it's taken a beating all week, so it's kind of sluggish, and it went to the party yesterday, so you know what that feels like. So let me see. Okay, I'm in the build configuration, right? So when I actually look at this build configuration, clicking on edit on that one. So it's actually spinning. Oops, not responding. You know what, let me close this tab and open it again. Yep, I will do that. So I'm gonna open my builds. This is a live demo. So, okay, build definitions. I'm gonna go into my build definition and I'm gonna edit it so I can show you what this looks like. So what this is doing is, this has got a list of steps, right? It says, hey, once an application is checked in, once a check-in is made, restore NuGet packages, build it using Visual Studio, test it using the test cases that I have checked in. These are unit tests at this point. Index sources and publish symbols. and then throw it into a share. In addition, what I'm doing here is I am also uploading it to a blob store. And this could be a blob store in your Azure or Azure Stack instance. So I have a single repository that can actually deploy an application, right? So let's see what that looks like. I'm going to go into my builds. And as a developer, I'm going to check in this code. I'm going to commit, and I'm going to push. It's probably the last time you'll see Visual Studio, I promise. So these changes are now being pushed to master, and the changes have been pushed in. Now, if you look at my queued, and if I refresh this, you see that TFS automatically picked up that commit, and it started building it. This is not me building it in Visual Studio locally. This is TFS set up for continuous integration. And the minute there is a check-in from any of my devs, the builds actually start. If I go inside and look at it, you will see all the steps being executed, right? It starts from, hey, I want to restore my NuGet packages. Go build my solution, test it, copy files to an Azure blob. Like I have it actually stored in an Azure blob. While we're at it, let me just quickly open Azure. This will take about a minute or minute and a half of my time. So I'm right now in Azure. And I'm going to go into my build store. So this is the Azure blob that is actually being used to upload my things. And you could, and I'm doing this just for a demonstration, so I'm throwing it up on Azure. But this would potentially be something that is on premises for you guys as well. As you see, I've been building a lot of things. And here, this build number is 30.1. So this is now building, and it's copying files to my staging server. And once it's done, it's going to publish my files to my Azure blob. See what that looks like. So it's initiating my Azure file blob copy. And here, if I click into each one of these things, it will tell me what are the artifacts and what are the steps that it's been done. So you can actually use TFS to automatically start these builds. Azure blob file copy is running. This is going to take me about 30-ish seconds. But once I open up Azure, you can actually see the blob that will show up. Let's see what that looks like, 85% up. So it's actually using Azure PowerShell. Right? While that completes, so that basically illustrates what I was talking about. Continuous integration, developers checking in code, automatic build picking up. Let me actually switch back to the slides, and we can actually, oh, it finished just in time. So if I actually go to my Azure and I refresh this, you will see that I have the build that I just did, which is like right here. It effectively built, packaged, uploaded it to a common location. So that is continuous integration. So let me go back to the slides. That's done. Now, continuous deployment. So we said continuous integration, automated testing, and continuous deployment will probably go hand in hand. So once this is done, you're now having to trigger, right? Once you have a good known build, you're triggering it so that it throws into your acceptance testing environment. So this is your pre-prod environment or testing environment, depending on what your model is effectively going to be, right? So you throw it there, you run more unit tests, more tests, and effectively they fail, go all the way back. Right? This is, so you're not patching the testing environment. You're going all the way back, because this is the process that you want to do. You're going all the way back, version control, build and testing. Once you have a good build, you're throwing it in there, and now that build is good. This is continuous deployment of different environments. Now, this particular section, so the transition between your build to your different kinds of environments is what we refer to as continuous deployment. And you can do that using multiple triggers. You can actually do that automated, right? When this test passed, automatically send it. You can do it manual, or you can do a scheduled task. So for instance, if you have a team that's got like 45 developers, you don't want to keep loading your acceptance testing environment every single time. You can say that aggregate these many good builds and the last known good build after, say, 3 hours. Every 3 hours, my acceptance environment is getting refreshed, or every 4 hours, or if you push it, every day, right? Depending on the product that you're effectively building. So what does that look like with TFS? So switching back to my environment, you guys see this. This is actually done, right? The build is succeeded. I have my blob. So TFS, let me open up a new tab for good measure. TFS also has a release management pipeline. So you can actually go into TFS and say, once a successful build is done, go ahead and release it to different environments. And you can provide conditions, triggers, and custom configuration values to tell TFS that, hey, you can go deploy in this particular environment with these set of values, right? That typically your production values and your pre-prod values are not the same because you probably want them going against different data. So this is my release pipeline in TFS. I'm going to go into one of the release configurations, and I'm going to show you what the configuration looks like. This is the fun part. When you have Azure and Azure Stack installed, when you actually work with Azure and Azure Stack, or when you work with Microsoft's hybrid cloud platforms, you will actually be able to automate, and you will also be able to write single set of scripts that can deploy your application to Azure or to Azure Stack or between your Azure Stack installations. So all of this consistency that we've been talking about, where we're saying, oh, you have the same resource manager, you have the same architecture, you'll be able to use the same lines of code. To an IT pro or to a developer, this is where the rubber meets the road, right? You will be able to use a single set of scripts. You will be able to leverage that expertise that you currently have in PowerShell and other scripting languages to be able to deploy your developer's code to an Azure or an Azure Stack environment, and you don't have to worry about having to write completely different sets of code for each, which is more than what you can say for your non-Microsoft hybrid clouds, like the non-Microsoft clouds where you have an on-premise deployment and another public cloud provider. You have to make sure that you're consciously aware of what you're doing in those cases. You have to be consciously aware of what you're doing in this case also, but you don't have to write multiple scripts to be able to do that, right? So in my release pipeline, I have a staging environment which is living in Azure, and I have a production environment which is Azure Stack, right? I can actually go do a bunch of steps. I'm saying Azure's resource group deployment. So TFS has natively built tools for Azure. We're still working on Azure Stack as a TP2. But TFS has natively built tools for Azure where you can actually go deploy a virtual machine, use DSC, and actually configure it with whatever you want for the base configuration of your environment. Matt already showed you that in the previous demo. He showed you a VM with DSC that enabled IIS for me. Now, I am building a website. So this is something that I'm using to deploy things to Azure. So I deploy my VM. And because it takes about 10 to 15 minutes to deploy a VM and configure it, I'm not going to enable that step right now. It's actually disabled, but it's not going to run, right? And then I'm deploying bits to the environment. I'm actually remoting into that VM, taking my build out from the Azure blob, and I'm throwing it into that VM into a configuration that I want. And then I'm running a unit test. So this is called remote Azure VM.ps1. I'm giving it a set of parameters, and I'm executing test, which is test application.ps1. This can be custom tests that you write, which could be BVTs, anything that you want to potentially write. Full disclosure, the test that we have in this environment effectively calls a URL and passes if it gets the callback or fails if it doesn't. In reality, you probably want to do a little bit more robust testing than that. So that's my staging environment, which is calling the two scripts. And my production environment, I don't have to deploy my production environment every time, so it doesn't have that step in there, right? So, but I'm calling the exact same script, remote Azure VM, and execute tests. Now, in my variables that I can say, I said you could assign triggers, variables, and everything to your release pipeline, right? So I can actually look at the variables, and this will actually tell you that, hey, this is my Azure Stack environment. And if I actually go look at the variables of this, this is my public cloud environment. So the configuration values are changing, but the script that I'm writing, the deployment mechanism I'm using, is essentially the same. So that's that. So now when I go into releases, I can actually trigger a release. Now notice, I effectively said there were automated releases. Now this is a manual release process. So I can actually say, let me actually do this one. So I'm going to say that I'm a very mature organization, right? And that I'm going to go into my release configuration and say, hey, do a continuous deployment to all environments. So once my CI build succeeds, I will automatically deploy it to all of my environments. So I'm going to save this effectively. And once this is saved, I'm going to go into my environments and say, hey, this is actually going to deploy after successful release creation. That is my pre-prod environment. And I'm actually going to configure this to say, this will automatically run after a successful deployment into my staging environment. So I'm automating the release process. So I can actually say, hey, so save this configuration, go into releases, and I'm going to trigger a release right now. And you can do this in an automated fashion once build is complete. So this is the current build, and this says automated release, and then after successful. So I'm now starting a build. Release 12 just started. And you can actually see an integrated dashboard that shows you, okay, this environment is currently being deployed. My staging environment is Azure. My production environment is Azure Stack. And the bug that I fixed, which said there's a problem in the home page with spelling being wrong, you can actually see that. So I'm actually in my Azure environment. I'm actually in one of the VMs. If you notice, this is effectively what is denoting that that was the error. So now I'm not going to wait for both environments to deploy. They will take a good 2 minutes. But this first environment will take about a minute and 20 seconds to continue deploying. So once that happens, until this point, do you guys have any questions? We can probably take a question. Yes. Yes. So clarifying question, are you talking about in this demo instance or regularly? In this demo instance, it could be either, Matt, please fill that in. The question was the template that Matt showed on his demo. Was it actually something that they built at that time, or is this something that's checked into my production repository? The answer is it could be both, preferably in the production repository, because you can use the repository then to pick up the template and automate that deployment directly from your repository. Right? The one that Matt showed right now, though, is not in my repository, but it's separate at this point. Right? My staging environment succeeded. So if I go into my staging environment and I actually refresh, there, fixed. So from development all the way up to pushing it into pre-production and production. I'm going to step it up a little bit here on the speed. So release management. Continuous integration, continuous deployment, automated testing, and release management together constitute what we like to call continuous delivery. Right? This is what you would want to get to in the end. So I actually fast forward on the demo because we're running short of time, but you just saw that from a continuous delivery standpoint, I made my build deployments automatic. So when my build completed, it automatically takes it to my pre-production, runs tests there, takes it to my production, and then runs my tests there. And once everything is good, I know that I'm continuously delivering the code to my customers. Now, I'm going to step it up a little bit, and I'm going to hand it off to Anjay.
Thank you. All right, everybody can hear me? Great. All right, so we're going to talk about how you can apply the principles that Sri just went through to your own organization and your own infrastructure. So let me just get a show of hands real quick. How many of you consider yourself to be developers? Okay, all right, a decent number. And how many of you work for an organization whose primary output, whatever your organization does, isn't software? You work for a bank, you work for something else, something that you guys don't produce software and ship it as your primary product. Okay, awesome, another healthy number. So this is how we can apply, and so, you know, the developers in your organizations are going to be moving to this DevOps model within the next couple of years, or they're already on their way there. And so, right, we're going to show you how to apply that not only to application code, but to infrastructure code. And when I mean infrastructure code, I mean, in the context of Azure, we have ARM templates. ARM templates are JSON files that semantically and clearly describe what resources are going to be deployed where and what configurations they're going to have. We'll go through one in a little bit. And they provide the capability for a lot of automation. They can be, they're just text files, so they can be checked into Git, they can be versioned, they can be continuously redeployed, and the Azure Resource Manager engine that makes sure everything goes in the place it's supposed to be is allows you to take the same template and the same location and deploy over and over again. And it checks for the differences and only deploys those differences. It allows for rapid testing and rapid product changes to bring more more value to your customers. So right now, you really want all of your environments to have the same infrastructure so that you know what you're testing on is the same as what you're going to be deploying on. Maybe it's not the same scale, but it has most of the same parts. Maybe you have a load balancer and a couple of web servers and a data layer, but you want that to be consistent across all your environments. Infrastructure as code and configuration as code allows you to make sure that those environments are identical to a T. And you don't have to worry about having long change documents or anything like that to make sure that everything is set up the way it's supposed to be. You just have this template and you can deploy it in multiple locations over and over again. This allows you to increase deployment rates and increase changes to your software, and allows you to respond to changes in requirements and deploy them faster. We also use automated testing not only for software, but we also use it for infrastructure. Let me wake my computer up here. We can actually run the same infrastructure deployment multiple times and run tests on it to make sure we get the results we want, just like Sri did with his code. This allows us to detect failures in our infrastructure deployments and to respond to them faster and increase our release cadence. So I'll show you, using Jenkins, an open source DevOps tool, how to use the DevOps principles and apply it to your infrastructure. Let me go ahead and log in here. So here we have an Azure Stack. This is an Azure Stack OneNode setup, and I have a website deployed on it. It's a very simple web app. It just says page loaded from and IP address and the VM it came from. Very simple. But I've decided this web app's going to get a lot more traffic because people really want to know about my virtual machines. And so I'm going to deploy a load balancer because I can. And so I have Visual Studio Code. We don't need Visual Studio. It's very heavy for this, but it's a very simple text editor, but it's very powerful. It has great syntax highlighting, and it'll provide helpful completions to help you complete your ARM templates. So let me go ahead and open up the template that I already created for the one with the load balancer. And if you compare these two, you'll see a couple of green blocks here, but you'll see this big green block down here. That block defines a load balancer, and that's just text. So I'm going to take this block of text from this template, copy it all, paste it into the template that I'm going to be deploying from, save it, and I'm also going to, I have my tests here. So right now, my tests check whether or not whatever the IP address on port 8081 is, which is my testing box, my non-load balanced format, and it's going to make sure it returns a few things. But now I'm actually going to test to make sure that the load balancer is functioning and it returns information from the proper port. So I will paste this, save. Remember, I didn't edit any application code. This is entirely infrastructure and infrastructure tests. I'm going to check it in. And now Jenkins will start kicking off a build for me. But right now, because that's going to take a little while, we'll look at an old build I put through the system that did the same exact thing. So as you can see, it sets up everything. It runs some tests on my code, just like Sri did, but that's not an infrastructure test. If you look here, you'll see that it deployed Azure Group Create West US. So I deployed my testing environment to Azure, and I deployed the template that contains a load balancer. We deploy it, and then we run some other tests here to make sure that the site returned the proper endpoints. After this, I then promoted it to Azure Stack. I still have a build log here. And as you can see, I have Azure Group Create production local. And the deployment template is exactly the same. So if we go and you see load balance site should return and the test passed. And it gives me a new endpoint that's different than the one in Azure that's clearly a local endpoint that I can paste into my app up into the browser window up here. And as if I refresh again, let me open up a new window. There we go. There, now you can see the IP has changed. That was simply an infrastructure change. No application code was changed. That was just through ARM templates, and it's something that you can do to bring value using Azure and Azure Stack to make sure that you have that consistency in both places to version and manage your infrastructure using DevOps principles. Let me go ahead and switch back here.
Question.
Yes.
Are you using the Azure plugin in Jenkins
now? No, I'm actually using the Azure CLI. I'm having Azure run, use the CLI to provision itself as to log in as a service principal, and then deploy use a deployment script to deploy the template. Sorry, he's asking if I used an Azure plugin for Jenkins.
Oh, no. In Jenkins, does Azure have a plugin for this deployment?
Right, in Jenkins, does Azure have a plugin for deployments? I didn't see one, so I used the Azure CLI to deploy, to just create the groups and run a deployment script. So that's just kind of what we saw right there. We have the code and ARM template together in the same repository. We committed a change just to the ARM template. We ran a pipeline that validated and deployed my code to a test environment. And then if it passed, which it did, we deployed it to Azure Stack. That's not something you're going to get on any other public-private cloud pair. That's the ability to just deploy to one and then deploy to the other. This allows us to have what's called hypothesis-driven development, that eventually we can run small tests on small subsets of a production environment. Maybe sometimes you guys have used a website and it looks a little different than when you looked at it 2 seconds later. It's A/B testing. We're looking at whether a small change affects the user experience or not. In order to determine whether or not what the changes we make are improving the user experience, we get telemetry, which is then logged, and we can analyze it later. And how many of you have heard of Netflix's Chaos Monkey? Quite a number of you. So that's an example of what's called fault injection, where either in testing or in production, you have an automated system that goes and takes down parts of your infrastructure to see how you fail over. You've probably heard the mantra, cattle not pets, right? And that enforces that by saying, if I go and I take out a third of your infrastructure, you have to be ready to fail over. That's what fault injection does, and it ensures that all the apps you build for the cloud are high reliability and very resilient. So we collect telemetry from users, where we're going to actually show a demo using Application Insights to show whether or not our changes are improving the user experience or not. We're going to use application performance monitoring to determine whether or not our infrastructure changes, such as deploying a load balancer, allows our users to access pages any faster, or access the parts of the app they want to use any faster, because if users don't get what they want in the time they want, they leave. Fault injection allows us to test for resiliency and allows us to detect failures. As you can see, this also depends on automated alerting using tools such as Nagios. And testing in production allows us to determine allows us to experiment with user experience and find things that'll improve it for the better. So, Sri, do you want to show how you added that to your application?
All right. So, switch back to my environment. So the application that I deployed then, it was a simple web application is what I said, right? I had it instrumented with App Insights. Microsoft has App Insights inbuilt with Visual Studio, so you can actually right-click add App Insights to that application. I added it, I've deployed it, and this is actually showing me the set of things that I basically did with my application directly from my Azure portal. Gives me a list of what components I have in my application. It gives me a set of failed requests and why they failed, and it also gives me an overview in the timeline. This will show me the number of server requests that that happened, what failed, when it failed, etc. I actually went in and I injected some fault. After I deployed this, I actually have a script that injects load into it. I had successful load. I had failed loads, which effectively then reflected back into my App Insights portal. And I can go into my analytics.app insights, which will exactly give me more robust details on what went wrong with my application. So I'm actually using App Insights for my application monitoring. The infrastructure, I'm using Operations Management Suite. I went on ahead and deployed OMS, right? OMS with OMS agents on my infrastructure, and now it is pumping data to my OMS. So now I have a consistent dashboard-like experience, which I can manage both my preview environment, which is basically the statistics of my preview environment, and I can make it my production environment. This is giving me production statistics from a production environment. So I've actually hooked up all of these environments to OMS, and from a single portal, I can actually monitor the statistics of the infrastructure. So application monitoring as well as infrastructure monitoring is possible. Right? Switching back, this is basically what we did, right? App infrastructure, applications going through App Insights through an App Insights dashboard. Infrastructure is going through OMS and effectively going into the OMS dashboard. And if you're using Azure effectively, they're building OMS extensions inside Azure, so you can have a single dashboard that's got both your App Insights as well as your infrastructure insights there. The whole point of doing all of this, right? Like, we've been speaking for this long about DevOps, right? We said the whole point of doing all of this is eliminating all of those processes that take place in traditional development which will slow you down, which will cause more faults, which will break, because there are a lot more handoffs happening, and that is not a more optimal system, right? So reduce the so from an IT pro standpoint, from an IT standpoint, when you're actually standing up the infrastructure, what you'd like to be optimizing here is to reduce the procurement cycle times and reduce the dependency that you have. From a developer standpoint, they want automation and self-service provisioning. So you want to be able to remove everything else which will cause you from not being agile or not being able to deliver value to your customers quickly. From a metric standpoint, so I've done all of this. How do I, you know, measure if I've been successful? What are the key points that we should be looking at? You have two kinds of indicators. You have agility performance indicators and reliability performance indicators. Like in the first slide, when Matt actually talked about this constant churn between business and IT, where there was turbulence on the top and then stability needed at the bottom, even in a DevOps process, you can take what you do today and find out where you fit into the DevOps process. So you have both kinds of indicators. How agile are the developers and how reliable can that deployment be? So agility performance indicators can be deployment frequency and change lead time. Deployment frequency can be an IT metric, right? An IT pro or somebody who's responsible for the infrastructure metric. Change lead time, the amount of time it takes to actually make that change, be able to fix it, push it, is change lead time. Reliability, change fail rate. How much does my changes break the bill? How often do I check in stuff that is not actually going into production? So change fail rate can be a developer metric, while mean time to detect and repair any changes, any infrastructure level changes can be an IT pro metric. So in a DevOps model, it is not like, oh, it's all going to be a developer. Even if you're an IT pro, if you're a developer, if you're an ops person, you effectively have a role to play in this DevOps process, and this can be your measure for success in this model. What to do next? Learn. Go read the docs about Azure Stack. We have a lot of these thrown into the Azure Stack column, so you can actually go read the docs, install Azure Stack, work with Azure, and deploy Azure apps. Try the PaaS services. Build hybrid applications. Play with it. See what that feels like, and embrace the DevOps model. Azure Resource Manager effectively has been, Mark, I don't know if he's here. There's an awesome white paper that's been written about Azure Resource Manager. Please go take a look at that. That is very detailed, and it is very, very, very applicable. Tools, get going with Azure PowerShell. Start in Azure. Will your solution work in Azure Stack? You know, in the keynote and in the pre-day as well, we talked about the policy tool and the template validation. When you get those tools, download them, play with them, learn how to develop in this model with Azure and Azure Stack. And then this week, they effectively announced DevOps with Azure. This is a page, aka.ms, try DevOps. It is actually a really awesome page where you go in and it'll ask you what your development process looks like, and it will guide you through what your DevOps process should be. So I just given a screenshot there. If you go there, the first thing is pick a DevOps tool of your choice. Are you a Visual Studio shop, or do you use Jenkins, Ansible? So you can pick, and it will take you through a wizard, and you will actually learn about how do you do DevOps with Azure and what tools that you can potentially use to do them. This is a very informative tool that you should potentially go try out. So quick recap of the session. DevOps effectively involves people, processes, and tools. If you're successful in DevOps, you're effectively doing all these three things right. If you're not successful, you're probably not doing one or all of these three things right. All three of these are needed to do successful DevOps. We went through what a successful DevOps pipeline looks like and how you can actually bring value to your customers continuously and as quickly as possible without burning a lot of your resources. We saw how you can do DevOps with TFS, with Microsoft tools if you're a Microsoft shop. We saw a demo where you can do DevOps with open source software as well, and how these two things interop. We talked about infrastructure as a code, continuous delivery, which is continuous integration, continuous deployment, release management, and automated testing. And in the end, we talked about monitoring, fault injection, and how you actually take metrics from your application and your infrastructure to understand what you're doing. Last but not least, we talked about metrics. How do you gauge if you're successful? And that's our session. Thank you so much for being here, you guys. We can take any questions you guys might have.
If you guys come up later, I've got some stickers. I don't know, like 15 or so. But if you want to come up and grab a sticker, you're more than welcome to.
Yep. And also, please give us feedback. Please give us feedback. We want to know what you think of the session. This is probably one of the first or second times we're doing this session in this audience. We'd like to make this better. So please give us feedback. Four slides? Oh, yeah. Sorry. OK. There we go.
Oh, yes, of course. Woohoo. These are Azure Stack specific, but I'm sure Azure has similar.
That's everything. This is Resource Manager.
This is awesome.
PowerShell. This is your Try DevOps.
Thank you so much.